Welcome to the JOMA podcast, presented by the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association. Every week, hear from expert medical professionals as they share up-to-date insights on health topics to help you live your best life physically, mentally, and emotionally. Join us as we navigate the ever-changing landscape of healthcare and strive to improve the health of the Orthodox Jewish community.
Dr. Berkovich here, board certified pediatrician and JOMA's director of education and podcast host. For this episode, I had the great privilege and joy to interview my good friend and mentor, Dr. Elisa Minkin, and I actually co-hosted this episode with Shandel Ifra, who is JOMA's chief operating and financial officer. Dr. Minkin is the former host of the JOMA podcast, which provides health education geared towards the Orthodox community. Dr. Minkin also previously produced the JOMA Preventative Health Hotline and is the past chair of the JOMA Preventative Health Committee. She is a board-certified pediatrician in Oceanside, New York. She attended Johns Hopkins University, followed by the New York University School of Medicine. She completed her training at Brookdale University Hospital and Medical Center. Dr. Minkin is on the leadership panel of the Haredi Health Coalition, which serves as a liaison between New York City's Department of Health and the New York Haredi community. She has worked on numerous COVID-19 and vaccine-related community health efforts in the past, including the MS Vaccine Task Force. Dr. Minkin's public health efforts on behalf of the Jewish community have been featured in numerous media outlets, including Mishpacha and Wellsprings Magazine. Welcome, Dr. Minkin.
Okay, well, I'm really excited to be here with you, Dr. Minkin. In 2019, we started working together in JOMA on the hotline, and we had the idea to turn it into a podcast, and many technical difficulties later, the podcast boomed very quickly, much because of your talent and your ability to get fantastic guests, phenomenal content, and just be an expert interviewer. But something that many people didn't know about, I didn't know when we started working together, was just how robust your professional and personal journey was before even coming and stumbling upon JOMA. So I wanted to know if you could tell us a bit about your professional journey until you found yourself as the podcast host for JOMA.
That's a good question. But first, I just want to say thank you to all the support I've had over the years, because I could not have done it without you and without Dr. Mimi Knoll and without Adina and all the other people that have helped me along the way. So this was a team effort, and it's not just me, but thank you. So that's number one. So my professional journey. So I was actually interviewed on this podcast as myself as the pediatrician. So I don't want to go into too much detail, but I will say I wanted to be a pediatrician since I was a little kid, a doctor since I was 3, a pediatrician since 7. I was that little weird kid that would read doctor books at home and decided that I had to give my sister the German measles with a permanent marker when I was 5, like weird stuff like that. So I really, really knew I wanted to be a pediatrician, and I became one. And it was all going perfectly until I had a child with special needs. And that was really when I kind of became a hybrid. I was a doctor, but I was also a special needs mom. And those are both professionals, by the way. And so it became fused together, and I had to take off time. I was home for quite a while. I was blessed to find somebody to mentor me back a number of years later. So I was able to go back to pediatrics, because that was a hard thing, by the way, deciding that I had to stop working because it was family first. And when I came back, like I said, I brought to the table my experience as a special needs mom, as at what one point was a stay-at-home mom, which is different from a working mother of special needs. They're both professionals, but this was the kind that I was. And it was a real amazing opportunity for me to do the podcast, because I had so much to talk about. And so many people, I wanted their viewpoints to be shared. And so it was a great opportunity for me.
I actually remember the first time that you told me about all of your background with your daughter and taking the time off. It was 2020, and we were just starting to discuss COVID, and not even COVID vaccines. We were still talking about, you know, quarantining and social distancing and masking. And I was waiting to get into medical school. And I called you, and it was like right before Pesach, and I was really nervous because I was going to have to move my family, and you shared with me all of this. So that was really inspiring for me, even as a pre-med student.
Yeah. Thank you. You have inspired a lot of people. I've been personally, you know, a fan of all of your work, and I've considered you a mentor in the field for a really long time. One thing that I've always been really almost intimidated by is how much work you put into the really and everything that you do for Joma, but especially into the podcast. There's like a lot of behind the scenes stuff, right? So like guests don't just appear, interview questions don't just appear. I know that you did a tremendous amount of work and research before each episode. How did you continue like to stay inspired? How did you continue to come up with ideas for guests and for topics? Because it wasn't just like a one episode thing or five episode thing that just kept continuing and growing, and every topic was new and interesting. And how did you kind of stay engaged in that?
I love that question. Number one, that's a great question. Number two, it's not really quite that simple, because when I said before about my life and I being two kind of professionals, I didn't always have to prepare for the podcast, right? Some of this was just my life and I could just walk in cold and do it. I won't tell you which ones I've done that for, like the one that I woke up and realized I had a podcast in 5 minutes. So some of the ones were not necessarily with deep preparation, because my life was preparation for that. But some were topics that I knew nothing about. And yeah, that's hard. That's hard. And that took a lot of work. I will say that. But I will say I'm a major book nerd. And one of my great joys was to be able to read someone's book as preparation for a podcast, because I got to interview an author. That's exciting. And in terms of maintaining the excitement, first of all, a lot of this was during COVID. If you remember how isolating COVID was, this was my therapy. Some people baked banana bread and I did a podcast. Okay. So people could listen to the podcast while they baked their banana bread. So to some degree, this was therapeutic. It was also therapeutic because, as you know, as a pediatrician, this is a hard time to do primary care. And so it was therapeutic to do it, but it was also something that I could literally hand over to my families in my practice as more of me than I could give in a short visit. And I today did that. I do it all the time. So it was a win-win from that perspective.
I love that.
You touched on some of your other work with Joma, including the COVID task force, and not limited to that. But that was a huge, huge, huge endeavor on your part and on all the parts of, you know, the doctors who worked in the task force. But I don't know if you've ever shared, and I would love for everyone to hear about other initiatives that you've been active in Joma, and hear a little bit about what inspires you the most about being part of the organization.
So that's great. And that's how I started with Joma. It wasn't a podcast originally. It was Dr. Maureen Nemetsky, and she gets credit for when we weren't even an organization, when we had our very first meeting at Traditions Restaurant. Remember that?
Yes.
And if you were there,
that's
then?
Like, well, I wasn't at the restaurant because that was like really far from my house, but I definitely remember helping organize that.
So, and actually, Eliana, right? Dr. Eliana Feinfeld, in her name's right, at the time, was in college, I believe. I don't think she was even in med school yet.
So she was a first year medical student.
Okay. For that, she was a college student volunteering with my daughter with special needs. And that's how I ended up at the restaurant, because she said, hey, I'm forming an organization. Want to come? That's how I got involved. So everything ties together. Okay.
That's amazing. I never even knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, at the very first meeting at Traditions, when we first had that first large group event, which was amazing, I think it was standing room only, Dr. Nemetsky stood up and said, we are a Jewish medical organization. We are women physicians. There is a problem now. There is a measles outbreak. This was 2019. We should be activists in our community as well. It's not just about helping each other with networking and support. It's also about being involved in the community. And I was like, wow, I really want to do that. Because again, bringing everything together, I don't want to know how much you want to hear about how I had my hesitance about vaccines. I didn't go down that rabbit hole all the way because I was already a doctor. But at the time that my daughter was being diagnosed late with autism, because girls often get diagnosed late, I was having another child, and Andrew Wakefield's scam piece in the Lancet was there. It was there for 12 years. During that time frame, it looked like a possibly legit thing. It is not. vaccines do not cause autism. How many times can I say this? But I was scared. And there they are saying there is an outbreak of measles due to lack of vaccination, due to parents being afraid. And who could understand that better at the time? I understood that as a mother of a child with autism, not just as a doctor. And so I wanted to do that. And so that was my first real passion with JOMA. And really the podcast came out of that. Why? Because originally we were like, okay, let's give vaccines to people in their homes because maybe that's why they're not getting them. That's not the main reason. The main reason was, of course, as I said, the fear, the lack of trust. And so people were calling up the hotline that we had because we used the word hotline, hanging up the phone. And we finally interrupted someone and said, like, why are you hanging up on us? And they said, oh, because where's the information? I thought this was an information hotline. And we were like, well, we could do that instead. Why not? Right? And so the podcast was what grew out of the information hotline. And so my original passion, my ongoing passion is still for public health and to build that trust. And the podcast is part of that effort to build trust with honest information.
Definitely.
From reliable sources.
And the podcast and the hotline have been huge in terms of JOMA's mission to make this information as accessible as possible to everybody.
I'm so proud of that.
One of the things that really stands out to me, and I think one of the things that I learned the most from you over this time, is how to approach conversations around vaccines, around fear of vaccinations, how to approach them with more balance. And I think that it's a very valuable lesson that I've taken beyond just my work with JOMA and public health, but really in my practice and seeing patients as well. With the work that we did with the late Chava Willick-Levy and the polio vaccine and all of that, I think was very empowering and eye-opening to me around the fear of vaccinations and how to approach those conversations. So I think that work to me is really important and meaningful. Do you have a similar either JOMA initiative or project that really stands out to you aside from like the hotline and things that we already touched on?
Yes, I do. And this is not one that I'm as involved with, but now that COVID, thank God, is behind us, we are going out into the communities, which is what we could have done to begin with had it not been a pandemic. And we are going out and meeting people face to face. And that's a huge piece in building trust. Who are we, really? You can get to meet us. I did get to do one talk. I got too busy, but I did get to do one talk in the five towns, and it was absolutely amazing. Thank you. It was so exciting. I can't begin to tell you. So that would be the answer to that.
Okay. So obviously you've been involved in a lot of the initiatives in terms of giving accessibility and addressing the challenges to health interventions in our community. What do you think from your experiences are some of the biggest health challenges that currently face the Orthodox Jewish community?
I think the biggest health challenges that face the Orthodox community are the exact same ones that face our country, our world. There is not really a difference here. There's a couple that come to mind. One of them is the lack of trust, which COVID made so much worse. It was problematic before. There are other factors that also make it worse, including the changes in primary care, you know, quicker visits, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one big problem, not just unique to the Orthodox community. There are historical reasons why the Orthodox community, particularly the more Haredi community, has less trust. So that we have to say, I have to say that to be, you know, completely frank. But it is very similar. It's just more of the same. And another huge piece is mental health. And again, COVID made that way worse in the Orthodox community, way worse in the rest of the world. It's really the same thing. I have to say, though, in a way, I think we may be better off. People may disagree with me, but I think we may be better off in the Orthodox world because we have so many amazing organizations and supports that they don't have the exact equivalents in the secular world. So I want to put out something that we're doing great with.
I would agree with that. I think there's a tremendous amount of resources. I, by the way, I also agree with you that those are the two biggest issues. Mm-hmm. And I think what you and I both see every single day in pediatrics are both of these things, the lack of trust and the hesitancies and the fear and all of that. And that manifests in multiple ways, not just with hesitancy in vaccines and mental health. And I agree. I think in the Jewish community, we do a great job of increasing access to that, acknowledging that this is a problem and working on removing stigma from that. Without getting into too much detail, because I know this question might be a little bit loaded, but what is kind of your outlook, at least on the lack of trust and the sort of disintegrating relationship between patient and doctor? What is kind of your outlook on that? Do you see that improving over time, or do you see this kind of being the beginning of the end for the doctor-patient relationship?
Well, don't ask me that question.
You can be honest. You can be honest.
I will always be honest. I think that unless things change, it's really bad. It's a very bleak outlook. I think though that when we bring it up on podcasts, we're making everybody aware of it, right? We're bringing it up to the doctors that listen, because we have a lot of doctors who listen to this podcast and other health professionals. I will not call them providers. I will not do that.
What
a whole other podcast.
It's a triggering word for all of us.
So triggered. And yeah. I did deal with this. I mean, if you look at my podcast, you will see numerous episodes on the doctor-patient relationship. Not to leave out other clinicians, because we have a lot of them, and I think that they need to be, you know, addressed also. And I try to be more inclusive in my language intentionally over time. But it is not a good outlook, but we're also talking about that to the patients, to the families. This podcast was intentionally directed to both at the same time with this idea of let's bring everybody together. I think there has to be a lot of a groundswell before things are going to change for the better. Do I think that's going to happen? I'm not optimistic. I'm sorry.
I think that's
I'm
fair.
Very depressed about this, actually.
I think that's fair. But I think one of the things that we do a really good job of at JOMA is, like you said, publicizing and acknowledging that this is a problem. And also really, really, really encouraging like the PCP relationship. I think like in all the content that I do, that's written content, and a lot of the work that you did on the podcast had to do with like bringing things back to the PCP, bringing things back to the medical home, and having somebody that you do have a good relationship with. That's not just like a one-off. That's not nothing against urgent care ERs. We need them as part of the model, but ultimately the relationship we need to work on preserving is between the patient and the PCP. I think that's ultimately the only way to like rebuild trust, is if you have somebody that you trust that maybe even refers you to a specialist, but they're the one that made the referral. They can say, oh, I know this GI, or I know this cardiologist, and they're going to take good care of you. I really think that that's at least one of the pieces that we can put back into making that trust better.
You know, I really agree with it. And as you're saying it, I'm thinking it really is a two-way street. Right? It's what we do to try to make that happen more from the professional end, but it's also from the patient family end as well. And so I think it's important to underscore that we can only help you if you come to us and if you tell us what's going on.
And that's one of the reasons, I mean, speaking with other professionals in the community, we work a lot with professionals in Borough Park, and we work a lot with professionals, you know, even in the OU. I feel like this is like a common theme that comes up, is that when you're a child, you have a pediatrician for the most part, because you need to be seen pretty frequently and you need school forms and vaccines. And right, you get sick maybe more frequently. When you're an adult, that's one of the biggest issues, I think, facing the Jewish community, probably not unique to Orthodoxy or even Judaism, but one of the biggest issues facing us is that adults don't have a PCP. And so it's really easy to not believe or to question or to doubt somebody who's giving you their medical opinion if you've never, ever met them before. I think that's fair. I think it's fair to question and to doubt it, right? But when you're getting from a PCP, I feel like it's going to be a different conversation. It's going to be received differently.
Right. But back to the families, you know, role in this, that I'm not sure how much a medical home is really appreciated nowadays with various other convenient options, you know, going to urgent care, going to the emergency room, you know, having somebody come to your home and do a strep test, for example. Mm-hmm. And I understand, you know, the need, and people are working in, and regular doctors may not be open late hours. I mean, I know a lot of practices are trying, but just to understand the role of the medical home, I think that that's important too, even for children who have a pediatrician.
But also something you touched on before, I actually saw this like meme or something from a therapist on Instagram the other day, where someone said, therapy doesn't work for me. And she said back, did you go go to, what was your experience? She's like, well, I went to a therapist. I didn't get along with them, so I never went back. And she's like, well, did you go to a new therapist after that? And she's like, no. So just like you were mentioning before, you know, maybe one provider or one, you know, doctor doesn't work for someone, isn't giving them the answers to the questions they have. Maybe they don't trust what they're saying, or they just don't click with their personality. That doesn't mean just throw out everything, go and try a different doctor.
Right. And it also underscores something I was a very big fan of, which is advocacy. Right? When you see something, say something. Right? You have a bad experience, you can speak to the office manager, you can speak to your doctor or other healthcare professional. You have a bad experience with the specialist, tell them. Right? So I think that that communication is part of that relationship with your medical home that I think is really important to develop. And it takes work. It takes work on both sides.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. I want to bring the conversation back to the podcast a little bit. Do you have any, either like a, I don't want to put you on the spot and make you like pick a favorite episode, but like any highlights from an episode, or anything that like you really still stuck with you today, or anything that was really maybe like surprising or even shocking?
I can't answer that question. And the reason I can't, and I know I saw the questions beforehand, full transparency, 5 minutes before, but whatever. And I looked at all the podcasts and I'm like, I love this one. And I love this one. And I love this one. I learned this from this one. I learned this from this one. I have been so privileged to have such amazing guests, one after the other. And I really don't want to pick one out. I will say that I just want to draw some attention to, I'm particularly proud of having interviewed at least two autistic professionals, which I think is pretty cool, Dr. Stephen Shore and Dr. Mel Hauser.
Those were both fantastic episodes, by the way.
I agree. So I think that being able to interview autistic people who are professionals has so many levels of good in it. So I'm really proud of that. I also brought, right before the interview, I just took a stack of books really quickly. I'm a book person and I got to interview all these authors.
That's so cool. That's really, really cool. That's really cool. I hope one of those books is written by Dr. Paul Offit, who I have no problem with calling out as being probably my favorite episode, which you know.
He was awesome, but so was Dr. Perry Klass, and so was Dr. Daniel Ofri, and those are authors that I read. So they're doctors who write about the doctor-patient relationship. So getting to interview them after reading piles of their books was really exciting. I got to interview, again, on autism. I got to interview Dr. Barry Prezant, Uniquely Human. This was a really big one for me, even though he is not himself autistic. This is supposed to be like one of the best books, including by people who are themselves neurodivergent. So that's a huge, huge thing. So I was really excited about that interview. And I have more. I don't want to, you know, leave anybody out. Every one of my interviewees at the time was my favorite.
I
say I'm excited, I meant it. Okay. Because I did every single time. And I meant it.
One other episode that I just want to like asterisk as being my favorite, just because I've gone back to it multiple times, is this was a few years ago. It's about pandas, pans and pandas. And I've listened to it a few times truly as like a CME, just because I'm still, every time I face a patient where this diagnosis is called into question or a potential diagnosis, I'm still not comfortable with it. I don't think any of us are comfortable with it unless like this is all that you do. And I've gotten back to it multiple times to really listen to what the current evidence is on it. So I thought that was a really fantastic episode.
Right. Pandas is a whole separate conversation. Okay. I don't think we want to go there right now, but I'm proud of doing an interview with someone who really does specialize in it from a mainstream institution.
Yeah.
However, even in that mainstream institution, this is still very much in a gray zone, just to be completely transparent for people who are listening to this and want to go back and listen to that.
And it's very clear, by the way, and that episode is very clear that is the case. And they're, you know, very transparent about it. But that's one of the reasons I like it, is because it is, as much as possible, it's evidence-based, but also acknowledges that the gaps that still exist in this field.
Right. And that's a tricky thing to do, by the way.
Yeah.
It's very hard, but I do think it's important. And especially when I was doing this during COVID, which I called uncertainty on steroids. Right. Dealing with medical uncertainty is a very challenging thing. And I just wish that we had better communication. I think it was hard for people who were used to communicating with more certainty to communicate amidst uncertainty. But if you look back and see why there's so much distrust, I think that it's how we deal with uncertainty as professionals. It's hard.
Yeah, it's like that balance of wanting to be the stronghold for people to be able to look to, like, okay, we know what we're saying. listen to the doctors, but also being able to say, we're not sure. This is what we know so far, without making everybody nervous. I saw there's like a lot of, obviously, analogies, but comparing doctors to pilots. And there's a lot of, I actually had an experience on the airplane last week where the plane landed and then just took off again. And, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is how all the stories start. Not like calling my husband, but I mean, thank God it was nothing. But during the experience, I don't think the captain handled it properly. Like he didn't communicate what happened. He was just like, sorry about that. And that was it. And it kind of reminds you of when you're in that leadership position, there's a certain amount of explanation that gives everybody assurance that everything's okay. Like if he got it on the speakerphone and been everything's okay. We're landing in XYZ amount of time. We'll get you to your destination, or just something, instead of just like, you know, I'm just going to like keep things to myself and you leave you guys guessing. That would probably have made everyone feel a lot better.
Yeah, no, that's really, really true. And I'm thinking of Dr. Michael Osterholm, who was also somebody that I was super, he didn't write a book. Well, he did write a book and I read it. Wait, wrong. Take that back. He wrote a book and I read it and I got to interview him. But early on in the pandemic, he was like the Mr. Rogers of COVID. All right. And I would listen to his podcast and it really helped me deal with the uncertainty because he was so calm and honest and gave tons of information. He was a really, really good communicator. And so we need more of that going forward.
I think you have been an excellent example of moving forward in that way and all of the nuance in your conversations.
Thank you. That's a really big compliment. I'll take it.
Dr. Berkovich too.
Yes.
She's the best.
She is.
I have two of the best right here, everybody. What is something that you hope will continue on this podcast and from the work that you've been doing? And maybe what are some changes that you hope to see?
So in terms of changes, I want to see more listener feedback, because any product for people is better when the people give feedback. And I know that when we get it, I really relish it. Even when some people sometimes say, I'm sorry to be negative, but I'm like, tell us what you're thinking. We want to hear. Tell us what you want to hear. We want to be able to do that. So that's one thing. I'm really hoping that there will be more honest, informative pieces, even in areas where there may be some gray zones, with, you know, clear indications of what we know and what we don't know from the current evidence base. I do like episodes where we are listening to someone's personal experience. I think that is also very helpful. And mental health. Okay. Can't stop the mental health.
I took notes. So the passing of the torch, the passing of the podcast torch, which is what we're doing today, which I'm so thrilled and excited to receive. But the ultimate question I think that we all want to know is what's next for you? What are you going to do now that the torch has been passed?
I'm going to listen to you. I'm like listening to podcasts too.
Right.
No, listen, I mean, to be honest, I'm doing this because my family comes first. Just like I had to stop doing medicine, which I love, love, loved. This is the exact parallel. I had to stop doing this, even though I love, love, love it. And I still do, to be with my family who needs me more and have things going on right now. Without getting into my personal life on a public podcast, but I had to, and everybody was very gracious about it. And I did give you guys a good warning, so I don't feel guilty. I feel good about it. But going forward, if I ever have the time again, I would do my own podcast. Again, am I going to do it in real life? I don't know. It depends on what else is going on. It depends on whether it works out with the family, you know, work balance with whatever else I'm doing. But if I did a podcast, I'm going to tell you right now that it wouldn't be an Orthodox Jewish podcast. It would be a podcast for everybody, because I work in a practice that is very diverse, and I would do it primarily on mental health, because clearly that is my greatest passion, and I see that as the greatest need right now. So that would be what I'm doing if I do it. No promises.
I do have one final question. It's something that I want to get into the habit of asking all the guests at the end of the episode. So the source of the podcast, like where it was born out of, was preventative health. So as a pediatrician, are there any like one or two big preventative health pearls, something that you say every single day, probably to every single patient, anything that we can do as parents or as caregivers or just as humans out in the world from a preventative health standpoint in terms of decreasing, you know, disease and being healthier?
I have so many. I have to pick two.
Yeah. I know it's a tough question to ask a pediatrician. I asked this to a trauma surgeon last time and she gave amazing answers. I was actually so impressed. But pediatrician, like, this is what we do. Like, pediatrics, like, overwhelmingly is preventive health. So I know it's
I will say one thing that I'm very, very passionate about is trying to prevent feeding and weight problems. I don't have an evidence base for this, but it's something I'm very passionate about, starting from the very beginning, not to enhance anxiety. There's a lot of inherent anxiety in feeding your child in the weight gain. And I try to remove what I call the tyranny of the scale. So that's something I'm very, very passionate. And I spend every single visit either not talking or talking about weight in a way that, and feeding that, that will help promote healthy, healthy behaviors and healthy approach to this and remove stigma.
I love that.
So that's like number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The other thing I would have to say that's also really important is I reinforce that mom knows best and that your mommy gut has got to drive everything. I'm here to listen to your mommy gut. I'm here to be the doctor, but your mommy gut has to be tuned into and I have to listen to it.
I love that. I bet there's people listening who are like, oh, I wish she was my pediatrician. What an amazing answer. Two fantastic answers. If I had been asked this question, I would have been like, wash your hands. I don't know. Like, don't eat too much juice, right? Don't drink too much juice. But those were fantastic answers. So
thank you.
I want to thank you so much for all the amazing work that you've done over the years with all your advocacy here at JOMA and outside of JOMA in the community. Thank you so much for being an amazing mentor to so many of us, including myself. And I look forward to continuing, hopefully making you proud and carrying on the podcast legacy.
I have 100% confidence in you. I got permission to mention that you had a podcast before this without going into too much detail. I don't know if you want to go into more, but it's one of the few podcasts that I've actually listened to almost every episode and I love them and you rock. And once I heard you were taking over, a huge weight was taken off my shoulders because I knew it would continue with the best person ever.
That's so nice. Thank you so much.
I mean it.
Dr. Rinkin, I've always said, I'm not going to steer you wrong. So now you speak for sure. I've not ever steered you wrong. Thank you for always being there for me and for JOMA and for being such an inspiration. I actually like have the chills like hearing you guys say passing on the torch because I just remember each and every transition of this podcast. And I'm excited to see what Dr. Berkovich has in store for us and see what you have going on next. So thank you so much.
I want to also thank Adina one more time because I felt bad leaving her and I'm glad that she has Dr. Berkovich now. And we did a podcast together. And I'm also very excited about that one. So I don't want to have her feeling left out because it was about, again, one of the topics I'm very passionate about, which is about helping your child emotionally. That's, I think it's called crying is coping. So I want to give a shout out before I leave this podcast to Adina. Thank you, Adina. Adina. You're amazing.
For those who don't know, Adina is our digital content director at JOMA, extraordinaire in technology, and also a child life specialist. So she was interviewed in an earlier podcast.
And thanks to everybody else who helped me along the way. And to Dr. Mimi Knoll, who told me that I could do this because I didn't think I could. So
thank you so much. This was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the JOMA podcast. We welcome your feedback and ideas for future episodes. Send us an email at health@joma.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform.